Thank you, my brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and us in the universe family of God, for listening to my podcast, Personal God Consciousness in Jesus and Living Eternal Truths. I am Brother Dave, your host. Please visit my large website, www.purechristians.org, or ledbyjesus.org, same website. You'll find many valuable and comprehensive religious and spiritual resources there. When you get there, scroll about 25% down the homepage, and then you may read, download, and share my always free 100-page PDF of key highlights of my books on the nature, life, and teachings of our Creator, Son of God, and Son of Man, Jesus Christ. If any here wish to receive by email a free copy of the text on our show, comment, ask questions, or receive more free text, just email me, dave@purechristians.org. Freely we have received truth in God's Spirit. Freely we love to share His truth. We hope and pray that you do too. We thank you, our brothers and sisters in the perfecting family of God, of all mankind here on earth. We thank you all for listening. Thank you for your spiritual support. We thank you for sharing gems of truth with others. We have selected verses and paragraphs on this topic from the Christian Bible and from the unique 2,097-page Fifth Epical Revelation of Truth, which is named the Urantia Book. That revelation was given around AD 1935. It's in modern American English, and it allows our seeking minds and souls much joy and enthusiasm as we read these powerful verses. All reflective truth-seeking humans on this planet will find some value from these readings. It's freely available online. There's no copyright because only humans can hold a copyright, and this revelation was given by superhumans, so it's fully in the public domain, and so it allows us to then share portions of it wisely with others. Now we continue in the Urantia Book, the last part 4, The Life and Teachings of Jesus, papers 120 through 196. We're now in paper 122, Birth and Infancy of Jesus, section 2, Gabriel appears to Elizabeth. This is paragraph 1. Jesus' life work on Urantia was really begun by John the Baptist. Zacharias, John's father, belonged to the Jewish priesthood, while his mother, Elizabeth, was a member of the more prosperous branch of the same large family group to which Mary, the mother of Jesus, also belonged. Zacharias and Elizabeth, though they had been married many years, were childless. Paragraph 2 and then 3. It was late in the month of June 8 B.C., about 3 months after the marriage of Joseph and Mary, that Gabriel, he's a high-spirit being, the chief executive of our local universe creator, Son of God, Jesus Christ, appeared to Elizabeth at noontime one day, just as he later made his presence known to Mary. Said Gabriel, "While your husband Zacharias stands before the altar in Jerusalem, and while the assembled people pray for the coming of a deliverer, I, Gabriel, have come to announce that you will shortly bear a son who shall be the forerunner of this divine teacher. You shall call your son John. He will grow up dedicated to the Lord your God. When he has come to full years, he will gladden your heart because he will turn many souls to God. He will also proclaim the coming of the soul healer of your people and the spirit liberator of all mankind." That's our Master Jesus Christ, Michael. "Your kinswoman, Mary, shall be the mother of this child of promise, and I will also appear to her." Section 3, Gabriel's Announcement to Mary. Paragraph 1. About the middle of November 8 B.C., one evening, about sundown, before Joseph had returned home, Gabriel appeared to Mary by the side of a low stone table, and, after she had recovered her composure, said, "I have come at the bidding of one who is my master, and whom you shall love and nurture. To you, Mary, I bring glad tidings when I announce that the conception within you is ordained by heaven, and that in due time you will become the mother of a son. You shall call him Joshua," that's Jesus in Greek, "and he shall inaugurate the kingdom of heaven on earth and among men," that's among all humans. "Speak not of this matter save to Joseph and to Elizabeth, your kinswoman, to whom I have also appeared, and who shall presently also bear a son, whose name shall be John, and who will prepare the way for the message of deliverance, which your son shall proclaim to men with great power and deep conviction. Doubt not my word, Mary, for this home has been chosen as the mortal habitat of the child of destiny.
My benediction rests upon you, the power of the Most Highs. That's 12 veranda deck sons of God, very high, just 2 levels under Jesus Christ, our Creator Son of God. The Most Highs will strengthen you, and the Lord of all the earth shall overshadow you. Section 4, Joseph's Dream, paragraph 4. Most of the so-called messianic prophecies of the Old Testament were made to apply to Jesus long after his life had been lived on earth. For centuries, the Hebrew prophets had proclaimed the coming of a deliverer, and these promises had been construed by successive generations as referring to a new Jewish ruler who was set upon the throne of David, and by the reputed miraculous methods of Moses proceed to establish the Jews in Palestine as a powerful nation, free from all foreign domination. Again, many figurative passages found throughout the Hebrew Scriptures were subsequently misapplied to the life mission of Jesus. Jesus was never going to sit on the throne of David. He was no mere Messiah or warrior king. That was great confusion among the Hebrews. Reading on, many Old Testament sayings were so distorted as to appear to fit some episode of the Master's earth life. Jesus himself one time publicly denied any connection with the royal house of David. Even the passage, quote, "A maiden shall bear a son," unquote, was made to read, "A virgin shall bear a son." I now explain. If Mary were the mother of Jesus and God the Father, Jesus would only be half God and half man. No, Jesus Christ, Michael, has 2 Trinity Spirit parents and 2 human parents for his human body incarnation here. Jesus is 100% God and 100% Spirit man, then, now, and eternally. Michael is a High Spirit title, which means he who is just like God. He is our God. Jesus is our God-man spirit personality here with us. Reading on, this was also true of the many genealogies of both Joseph and Mary, which were constructed subsequent to Michael's career on earth. Many of these lineages contain much of the Master's ancestry, but on the whole, they are not genuine and may not be depended upon as factual. The early followers of Jesus all too often succumbed to the temptation to make all prophetic utterances appear to find fulfillment in the life of their Lord and Master. Paper 123, The Early Childhood of Jesus, Section 5, School Days at Nazareth, Paragraph 6. Next, in addition to his more formal schooling, Jesus began to make contact with human nature from the 4 quarters of the earth as men from many lands passed in and out of his father's repair shop. When he grew older, he mingled freely with the caravans as they tarried near the spring for rest and nourishment. Being a fluent speaker of Greek, he had little trouble in conversing with the majority of the caravan travelers and conductors. I had here, later, Jesus spoke and read 3 or 4 or more languages clearly, and also worked as a translator in traveling through different countries, mostly Gentile countries. A lot of that never got in the Bible because the Jewish writers back then only wanted Jesus to be for Israel as Messiah, and they didn't think the other countries were worth much. But Jesus came to declare all humans are equally divinely beloved sons of God. And if you're a daughter, a female, you are spiritually classified as a son of God, the same as all men are. All men and all women are spiritually classified as sons of God, and the daughters of God would be all the different types of angels. Okay, now we go to paragraph 11. When entering school at 7 years, at this time the Jews had just inaugurated a compulsory education law. It was customary for the pupils to choose their birthday text, a sort of golden rule to guide them throughout their studies, one upon which they often expatiated at their graduation when 13 years old. The text which Jesus chose was from the prophet Isaiah. Quote, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the meek, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and to set the spiritual prisoners free." Powerful truth. Paper 124, The Later Childhood of Jesus, paragraph 1 and 2. Jesus' 9th year, AD 3. Now, why Would Jesus be 9 years old in AD 3? I'll explain. Jesus incarnated here on August 21st of 7 BC. There is no year zero, so we add 6 years to our calendar year to know Jesus' age starting at August 21st. And this is the year of 2021, add 6, so Jesus incarnate as Son of God and Son of Man is 2,027 years old, as of this coming August 21st. So he's 2,026 years old right now. As an eternal creator's son, he's an eternal being. On that, I should add that people argue about when does personality start. Does it start at conception or at birth or in between? And a lot of controversy about abortion. And the truth is that not only when the sperm and egg union unite, that is a full human personality. And personality is an eternal gift, always existent in God the Father, beamed and projected into you at the time of the union of the sperm and egg. So even though that sperm and egg doesn't have any mind at that instant, that is still classified as a personality, a potentially eternal personality. That's very important. That's in the Bible. God said, before you were born, I knew you. Now we go on to paragraph 2. School went on, and he was still a favored pupil, having 1 week each month at liberty. And he continued to divide his time about equally between trips to neighboring cities with his father, sojourns on his uncle's farm south of Nazareth, and fishing excursions out from Magdala. Section 3, the 11th year, AD 5. Paragraph 3. Jesus spent considerable time at the caravan supply shop, and by conversing with the travelers from all parts of the world, he acquired a store of information about international affairs that was amazing, considering his age. This was the last year in which he enjoyed much free play and youthful joyousness. From this time on, difficulties and responsibilities rapidly multiplied in the life of this youth. Paper 125, Jesus at Jerusalem, Introduction, Paragraph 1. No incident in all of Jesus' eventful earth career was more engaging, more humanly thrilling, than this, his first remembered visit to Jerusalem. He was especially stimulated by the experience of attending the temple discussions by himself, and it long stood out in his memory as the great event of his later childhood and early youth. This was his first opportunity to enjoy a few days of independent living, the exhilaration of going and coming without restraint and restrictions. This brief period of undirected living, during the week following the Passover, was the first complete freedom from responsibility he had ever enjoyed. There was many years subsequent to this before he again had a like period of freedom from all sense of responsibility, even for a short time. Section 1, Jesus' views of temple, paragraph 2. But most of all was his sense of propriety outraged by the sight of the frivolous courtesans, those are prostitutes, parading about within this precinct of the temple, just such painted women as he had so recently seen on a visit to Sepphoris. This profanation of the temple fully aroused all his youthful indignation, and he did not hesitate to express himself freely to Joseph. That's his human father. And I add, the temple in Jerusalem had authorized temple prostitutes, and most of these women thought it was an honor to do such work for the priests and scribes and Pharisees. Section 5, the third day at the temple. Paragraph 8. And all the day through, those who listened marveled at these questions, and none was more astonished than Simon. For more than 4 hours, this Nazareth youth, Jesus, plied these Jewish teachers with thought-provoking and heart-searching questions. He made few comments on the remarks of his elders. He conveyed his teaching by the questions he would ask. By the deft and subtle phrasing of a question, he would at one and the same time challenge their teaching and suggest his own. In the manner of his asking a question there was an appealing combination of sagacity and humor which endeared him even to those who more or less resented his youthfulness. He was always eminently fair and considerate in the asking of these penetrating questions. On this eventful afternoon in the temple, he exhibited that same reluctance to take unfair advantage of an opponent which characterized his entire subsequent public ministry. As a youth and later on as a man, he seemed to be utterly free from all egoistic desire to win an argument merely to experience logical triumph over his fellows, being interested supremely in just one thing, to proclaim everlasting truth, and thus effect a fuller revelation of the eternal God. I add, the best way to know about God is to know the nature, life, and teachings of Jesus, and to listen in spirit to God and Jesus, now always here, as He, the Father, Son, Union, Spirit of all truth. Paragraph 9 and 10. When the day was over, Simon and Jesus wended their way back to Bethany. For most of the distance, both the man and the boy were silent. Again, Jesus paused on the brow of Olivet, but as he viewed the city and its temple, he did not weep. He only bowed his head in silent devotion, in communion with God the Father. Paragraph 10. After the evening meal at Bethany, he, that's Jesus, again declined to join the merry circle, but instead went out to the garden, where he lingered long into the night, vainly endeavoring to think out some definite plan of approach to the problem of his life work and to decide how best he might labor to reveal to his spiritually blinded countrymen a more beautiful concept of the Heavenly Father, and so set them free from their terrible bondage to law, ritual, ceremonial, and musty tradition. But the clear light did not then come to the truth-seeking lad. That comes later. Paper 126, The Two Crucial Years. Paragraph 1. Of all Jesus' earth life experiences, the 14th and 15th years were the most crucial. These 2 years, after he began to be self-conscious of divinity and destiny, and before he achieved a large measure of communication with his indwelling adjuster, that's God's pure spirit, essence, God's will, living within all normal, slightly or better moral humans. We have personality from eternity beamed into us at conception. We have personality, which never changes. Every personality is perfect and unchangeable. But it's probationary if we're going to unite with that high personality and God's high spirit indwelling us to guide us. Those are up to us to see if we can do that in our soul. It is soul that ascends, not mere bodily. We ascend in soul, and then we have either at that time, potentially or eternally, our personality and God's indwelling spirit, God's will. But if we at that time or later decide we don't want the eternal plan of glorious ascension and ever seeking to know and do God's will, if we absolutely reject that, then God is loving, He's not wrathful, there's no hell, fire, and damnation. But if we reject eternal life and later up in heaven in a time of divine eternal judgment, then, painlessly and instantly, God would make us as if we never were. We would be extinguished forever and not have personality, not have God's will, not have anything. We're gone. It's to be an eternal Son of God or to be not. That is the question. That's only between God the Father and you. It has nothing to do with any intermediaries or any swamis or shamans or priests or popes or pastors or ministers or saints or any mere or lower beings, lower spiritual beings. None of those are between God and you. God and you are now actually fused together. Very few people know that. But the thought adjuster is pre-personal. You have personality. So you, with personality, can dictate and say to the divine will of God living within you, yes, I will do that, Father, or I won't. You can override the will of God. God did that on purpose because He wants you to freely want to seek and follow Him and not do it as a slave. To have true freedom, we have to have the freedom to exist or not to exist. That's part of our gift of true personality freedom. Okay, let's see, the two crucial years, I stopped at adjuster. So let me go on here. He achieved a large measure of communication with his indwelling adjuster, were the most trying of his eventful life on Urantia. It is this period of 2 years which should be called the great test, the real temptation. No human youth, in passing through the early confusions and adjustment problems of adolescence, ever experienced a more crucial testing than that which Jesus passed through during his transition from childhood to young manhood. And here's part of this great test, section 2. The death of Joseph, that's Jesus' human father. Paragraph 1. All did go well until that fateful day on Tuesday, September 25th, when a runner from Sepphoris brought to this Nazareth home the tragic news that Joseph had been severely injured by the falling of a derrick while at work on the governor's residence. His dad, Joseph, was a master carpenter, supervisor. Very dangerous work, though. The messenger from Sepphoris had stopped at the shop on the way to Joseph's home, informing Jesus of his father's accident, and they went together to the house to break the sad news to Mary. Jesus desired to go immediately to his father, but Mary would hear to nothing but that she must hasten to her husband's side. She directed that James, then 10 years of age, should accompany her to Sepphoris, but Jesus remained home with the younger children until she should return, as she did not know how seriously Joseph had been injured. But Joseph died of his injuries before Mary arrived. They brought him to Nazareth, and on the following day he was laid to rest with his fathers. Paragraph 2. Just at the time when prospects were good for the future, and the future looked bright, an apparently cruel hand struck down the head of this Nazareth household. The affairs of this home were disrupted. Every plan for Jesus and his future education was demolished. The carpenter lad, now just past 14 years of age, awakened to the realization that he had not only to fulfill the commission of his heavenly Father to reveal the divine nature on earth and in the flesh, but that his young human nature must also shoulder the responsibility of caring for his widowed mother and 7 brothers and sisters, and another yet to be born. This lad of Nazareth now became the sole support and comfort of this so suddenly bereaved family. Thus were permitted those occurrences of the natural order of events on Urantia, on earth, which would force this young man of destiny so early to assume these heavy but highly educational and disciplinary responsibilities attended upon becoming the head of a human family, of becoming father to his own brothers and sisters, of supporting and protecting his mother, of functioning as guardian of his father's home, the only home he was to know while on this world. Paragraph 3. Jesus cheerfully accepted the responsibilities so suddenly thrust upon him, and he carried them faithfully to the end. At least one great problem and anticipated difficulty in his life had been tragically solved. He would not now be expected to go to Jerusalem to study under the rabbis. It remained always true that Jesus, quote, sat at no man's feet, unquote. He was ever willing to learn from even the humblest of little children, but he never derived authority to teach truth from human sources. His authority is of God, and of God within him. Paragraph 7. The economic affairs of the family continued to run fairly smoothly, as there was quite a sum of money on hand at the time of Joseph's death. Jesus early demonstrated the possession of keen business judgment and financial sagacity. He was liberal but frugal. He was saving but generous. He proved to be a wise and efficient administrator of his father's estate. Section 4, First Sermon in the Synagogue, Paragraph 2. Jesus was age 15 when he gave his first sermon in the synagogue, and he began with Isaiah 61.1. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the meek, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and to set the spiritual prisoners free, to proclaim the year of God's favor and the day of our God's reckoning, to comfort all mourners, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy in the place of mourning, a song of praise instead of the spirit of sorrow, that they may be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, wherewith he may be glorified. Section 5, The Financial Struggle, Paragraph 10. This was the year that Jesus rented a considerable piece of land just to the north of their home, which was divided up as a family garden plot. Each of the older children had Jesus had 8 younger brothers and sisters in his earth immediate family, had an individual garden, and they entered into keen competition in their agricultural efforts. Their eldest brother spent some time with them in the garden each day during the season of vegetable cultivation. As Jesus worked with his younger brothers and sisters in the garden, he many times entertained the wish that they were all located on a farm out in the country where they could enjoy the liberty and freedom of an unhampered life. But they did not find themselves growing up in the country, and Jesus, being a thoroughly practical youth as well as an idealist, intelligently and vigorously attacked his problem just as he found it, and did everything within his power to adjust himself and his family to the realities of their situation and to adapt their condition to the highest possible satisfaction of their individual and collective longings. Paper 127, The Adolescent Years, Section 2, The 17th Year, that's A.D. 11, Paragraph 9. James, a younger brother of Jesus, stated that he was sure Jesus would help to liberate his people if he, James, were only old enough to assume responsibility for the family, and that, if they would only consent to allow Jesus to remain, quote, with us to be our father and teacher, then you will have not just one leader from Joseph's family, but presently you'll have five loyal nationalists. For are there not five of us boys to grow up and come forth from our brother father's guidance to serve our nation? Unquote. And thus did the lad bring to a fairly happy ending a very tense and threatening situation. I add, Jesus and his earthly family had eight younger brothers and sisters. When Joseph died, young Jesus had to be both father and brother to Mary and eight children. That was great training for Jesus' future mission on your rancher. Section 4, the 19th year, A.D. 13, paragraph 3. Jesus began wise discipline upon his brothers and sisters at such an early age that little or no punishment was ever required to secure their prompt and wholehearted obedience. The only exception was Jude, upon whom on sundry occasions Jesus found it necessary to impose penalties for his infractions of the rules of the home. On three occasions when it was deemed wise to punish Jude for self-confessed and deliberate violations of the family rules of conduct, his punishment was fixed by the unanimous decree of the older children and was assented to by Jude himself before it was inflicted. Very, very fair. Now, judgment is never an individual. It's not vigilante justice. Judgment is always among senior, well-informed, fair individuals. Or in case with us, we have judgment of the Paradise Trinity, all perfect beings with no error, knowing everything of all conditions, why we erred or sinned or whatever. Paragraph 9, as time passed, Jesus did much to liberalize and modify the family teachings and practices related to Sabbath observance, that'd be Saturday, and many other phases of religion. To all these changes, Mary gave hearty assent. By this time, Jesus had become the unquestioned head of the house. Section 5, Rebekah, the daughter of Ezra, paragraph 2. This is nearly a romance story here. Maybe it is. Rebekah listened intently. She was thrilled with the recital and more than ever determined to cast her lot with this man of her choice and to share his career of leadership. I guess that's when she talked with Mary, human mother of Jesus. She agreed to herself that such a man would all the more need a faithful and efficient wife. She interpreted Mary's efforts to dissuade her as a natural reaction to the dread of losing the head and sole support of her family. But knowing that her father approved of her attraction to the carpenter's son, she rightly reckoned that he would gladly supply the family with sufficient income fully to compensate for the loss of Jesus' earnings. When her father agreed to such a plan, Rebekah had further conferences with Mary and Miriam. Miriam's a sister of Jesus. When she failed to win their support, she made bold to go directly to Jesus. This she did with the cooperation of her father, who invited Jesus to their home for the celebration of Rebekah's 17th birthday. Okay, I'll leave out some of that. Now we go to paragraph 5. After listening attentively, he, Jesus, sincerely thanked Rebekah for her expressed admiration, adding, quote, "It shall cheer and comfort me all the days of my life," unquote. He explained that he was not free to enter into relations with any woman other than those of simple brotherly regard and pure friendship. He made it clear that his first and paramount duty was the ring of his father's family, that he could not consider marriage until that was accomplished, and then he added, quote, "If I am a son of destiny," of course he is, "I must not assume obligations of lifelong duration till such a time as my destiny shall be made manifest. Unquote. And, of course, we know Jesus never married. He never had any physical human children. Section 6, A.D. 14. Paragraph 6. On this visit occurred one of those periodic outbreaks of rebellion against tradition, the expression of resentment for those ceremonial practices which Jesus deemed misrepresentative of the Father in heaven. Not knowing Jesus was coming, Lazarus, a friend of Jesus, Lazarus had arranged to celebrate the Passover with friends in an adjoining village down the Jericho Road. Jesus now proposed that they celebrate the feast where they were, at Lazarus' house. But, said Lazarus, we have no paschal lamb. And then Jesus entered upon a prolonged and convincing dissertation to the effect that the Father in heaven was not truly concerned with such childlike and meaningless rituals. After solemn and fervent prayer, they rose, and Jesus said, let the childlike and darkened minds of my people serve their God as Moses directed. It is better that they do. But let us, who have seen the light of life, and that's Jesus here too, no longer approach our Father by the darkness of death, the death of murdering animals for food. Let us be free in the knowledge of the truth of our Father's eternal love. Of course, Jesus was not a total vegetarian. He did eat meat too. But he didn't eat meat for any religious ceremonial. Paschal lamb, that's not very spiritual. Now we go to paragraph 8. It was during this year that Mary had a long talk with Jesus about marriage. She frankly asked him if he would get married if he were free from his family responsibilities. Jesus explained to her that, since immediate duty forbade his marriage, he had given the subject little thought. He expressed himself as doubting that he would ever enter the marriage state. He said that all such things must await, quote, my hour, unquote, the time when, quote, my Father's work must begin, unquote. Having settled already in his mind that he was not to become the father of children in the flesh, he gave very little thought to the subject of human marriage. I add here, if Jesus had fathered children, they probably would all be invisible and a new spiritual order. Jesus would never have done that. He always did and always does God's will perfectly. Okay, that is enough for this section, part 11. So then in about 2 weeks, we'll continue part 12. And rather than say goodbye, I'd like to say farewell, do well. Thank you.